Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and life coach Cindy Chavez here. Today is Wednesday, September the 19th, 2018, 8 a.m. Eastern Time, your first daily dose of happy for the day, and kind of like your midpoint dose of happy for the week, because we're halfway through the week. But I got to tell you, Cindy, we were talking before the show about how both of us got a good night's sleep last night, and considering what we were talking about last week, that's a really, really good thing. It's a great way to start the day. You know, you're rested, you know, you're feeling great. What a big change that is. Oh, my God.
It is. It makes all the difference, especially if you've had more than one night in a row of good sleep.
Yeah, right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. No, that's really important. And it also is important to how we go through our days, because we're dealing with stuff. We need to be alert in order to feel good. It's kind of hard to feel good when you're not alert, you know, when you're kind of like halfway there, or you're drowsy or whatever. That's not exactly when I'm in my happiest place. I mean, it's really, really hard. And yet that's what we want to do as deliberate creators. We want to be in that happy place. So that sleep plays such a major, major role.
Ugh. Yeah, I always feel a little bit like I'm not grateful or something when if I've had a stretch of nights where I don't sleep well, and then I have a night where I sleep really well, I'm really happy about it. And at the same time, it doesn't feel like it's enough. I still feel tired. And so I was kind of like that recently. I had a situation like that, and I just felt like, oh no, I'm really glad I slept last night, but I still need more. Like, do you ever catch up with that sleep deficit? You know, but last night and the night before, I think I've had a few good nights of sleep in a row, and it's like a miracle when that happens. I feel so much better.
Oh yeah. And I do think that when you're in the place that you were just describing, what you're really saying is, I don't feel thrilled enough about getting up, so I want to stay in bed. And I think that really shows how important not only being happy is, but getting the rest is, because they fuel each other. And I think if you do that often enough, I think we get to the point where we're experiencing that abundant life in such a huge way that we can't wait to get out of bed. I'm trying to remember the last time I couldn't wait to get out of bed. Like, oh, wow, the day is here. Let's go. Because that's really where we want to be.
Well, I remember the first time that, because for me, I used to be a really, really early bird. And I've never been a night owl. After a certain time, and when it's not even dark yet, I feel myself, it's like, I don't want to schedule anything important or try to do any important writing or anything in the evening, because it's like, I'm finished. And I feel like I'm my best, sharpest, clearest, most energetic self early. And then my schedule changed. So I really don't go to bed any later, but sleeping later. And so the mornings that I get up early are podcast mornings, which works out really well for me, because I like to get up early sometimes. So I have my sometimes. Those are the days that I'm on the podcast in the morning with you. But I still remember it was hard at first to get up that early. And I still remember the first day that I woke up a little bit earlier than I needed to wake up. And I was so excited I was like, oh, it's a podcast day. I'm so excited.
Yes.
And it was funny. It kind of took me by surprise. I thought, oh, that's a good thing when you're so excited whatever's happening that you just want to pop out of bed.
The story I always love to tell is a number of years ago, Louise was very big into trash to treasure kind of stuff. You know, go to the local tag sales, find something really fun.
You got to be out there early for those.
and what's really wild about it is that she's never been much of a morning person. I mean, she regularly likes to sleep in. But on a Saturday, when she was in the middle of that, 6 o'clock, boing, eyes open, I'm out the door, see ya.
I love it. That's so funny.
It is funny.
My story, when I first, I live on a street that has a parade. It's a parade route for one of the biggest parades around.
Really?
And it wasn't the biggest parade when I first bought this house. It was a little parade. It has grown into a big parade.
Uh-huh.
And what's so funny is that I got my little kids up. They were really small at the time, and we were going to go with a friend of mine to some tag sales. So we got up and we went out, and you know, it was 7 o'clock in the morning or whatever. And we went out and we did a bunch of tag sales and we grabbed some lunch. And by then it was 11 and we were already done on our way back, and the street was blocked. It was like, what is going on? And it was the parade. And I couldn't get back to my house.
Oh,
that was the first year I lived here when I didn't know about this parade.
Really funny. Well, that's one way to find out about it, I guess.
Whenever we talk about tag sales, I always think about that.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is that now it's so big. The streets are all blocked off. I mean, there's barricades the night before. There's no way you could miss it now, but that's how big it's gotten is that I actually missed it and didn't know it was even happening.
That is so funny. What kind of parade is it? I mean, is it like a typical Mardi Gras or what is it?
It's a St. Patrick's Day parade.
St. Patrick's. Oh, okay.
So, you know, it's in March. Mardi Gras has already finished up and it's just, I always joke, it's just an excuse to keep Mardi Gras going because, So.
Well, it's a good excuse, you know.
Our trees on our streets are always full of beads year round.
Oh, that's funny.
Funny. The beads, they throw the beads and the floats go by and the beads land in the trees often. And so the trees just collect the beads over the years.
Well, it's so funny. You know, as you're telling that and kind of filling in the gaps of that story for us, it reminds me of something that you say a lot, which is that, I mean, we've talked before about how the three big topics of law of attraction are money, health, and relationships. And as you'd like to point out, everything is about relationships. It's not just about relationships to people. We have relationships to money. We have relationships to health. We have relationships to family. We have relationships to our home, to our city, to our town, to the parade going down the street.
Right.
And that's what I'm thinking about. You have all these little relationships that are demonstrated by things like Mardi Gras beads in the trees of your front yard.
Right.
But the relationships are everywhere.
I mean, when you think about it, I remember as a kid, I grew up in California and one year during my, and it was a sad year, so we won't dwell on it, but one year in my life, in my young life, we moved away across the country. We moved to Indiana and then we moved back. So I was in California from the time I was born until I was in my 20s, with the exception of that one year.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I moved here to Louisiana from California. So two times in my life, I've had an ultra big dose of culture shock. And what's always affected me in such a deep way is the recognition that things that you might not think affect you in a big way when you move like that do. Things like food, things like weather, you know, things that are an everyday part of your life and how you relate to life.
Mm.
You like little things like in California, where I grew up in the Bay Area, San Francisco, if you look out the window and it's raining, it's going to be cold and you grab a coat or a sweater. I mean, that's just how it is.
Right.
And it doesn't rain very much, but if it does, it's cold. And then I moved here and it was raining in the summer and the raindrops were warm. It's like being on another planet.
Yeah.
Like, what in the world is happening? You know, it'd be like you looking out the window and you see it's snow. You automatically know it's cold, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to go out there and, oh, the snow's warm today. It was weird. But it affects how you experience your day when things like that change. And yeah, I'm a big believer that everything's about relationship. And I remember a friend who's also been a client said to me one time, she was telling me a situation that was happening. And I said, well, it sounds like time for a conversation. And she started laughing. She said, everything is a conversation with you, isn't it? And I said, yes, it is.
Well, how appropriate are you doing a podcast? That's great.
Everything's a conversation. So everything's a relationship.
It is. It truly is. And we were actually talking before the show, okay, we want to do something with relationships today. Where do we want to go? And we realized all we have to do is utter the word relationship, and God, it could go in any direction at all. There are no limits to it just because of that fact, because of the fact that everything is about relationship. So, for instance, we could start with, you know, like you were talking about the weather. We could start about talking about the weather. And the first thought that went to my mind when you described moving from San Francisco to Louisiana and experiencing how rain felt different in Louisiana. I had a similar experience when we moved from Connecticut to Virginia. Connecticut, of course, is part of New England. And here in New England, during the fall in particular, is where we get brilliant fall color. And I was just used to that. that to me was normal. You always have beautiful fall color. You're also kind of used to the fact that the spring lasts about 2 weeks and the fall lasts about 4 weeks and then the rest of it's summer and winter. Well, you move to Virginia and you get four full seasons. I mean, spring is spring and it lasts a full spring. Fall is fall and it lasts a full fall. Winter is winter. Summer is summer. And they are exactly, you know, it's almost like they're perfectly mapped out throughout the year.
But I can't even imagine spring lasting 3 months.
But the really weird thing is that the color, the fall color, is muted by comparison to New England. Mostly because they don't have the same diversity of trees that we have in New England. And so you have to have a variety of different kinds of trees that produce a variety of different kinds of colors in order to get the effect. Plus, color, tree color, leaf color is best when you don't have direct sunlight on it. You want to have indirect sunlight because that's when things tend to pop more. And in Virginia, you get a lot more direct sun. Even when you get direct sun in New England, it's more angled, right? Because you're in a more northern latitude. So you don't have that direct top-down kind of sun rays, even in the middle of the day at 12 noon. You know, even then, it's still angled. In fact, one of the things that we realized that we'd forgotten about when we moved back to Connecticut was that at 4 o'clock, it's almost like the sun is near the horizon. And it's like 4 o'clock. And you notice it because you're driving and the sun's right in your face. It's like, that never happened. Well, that's because you're back in New England. But the point is, when you miss those colors and you notice for the first time that they're gone, you really miss them.
Because how did it affect you?
Because I knew it. I knew them all of my life. I mean, I had experienced beautiful fall color my entire life. And when it was gone, it was like color had disappeared.
Yeah. I mean, I'm curious emotionally how it affected you.
Oh, it brings you down.
Yeah. See, that was sort of my experience with, and it's funny because I'm sure people have the opposite, you know, effect if they're moving. I mean, what if you moved? I feel like if I moved to a place where there was fall color, that certainly wouldn't bring me down. You know, it would be like, oh my goodness, this is magical.
It is.
But I had the effect of, and the summer rain was sort of like that. But as a child moving from very moderate, you know, beautiful California weather, we moved in the fall for school.
Mm-hmm.
So when we got to Indiana, it was just, by the time we settled in, it was winter and there was snow and ice. And I'd never dealt with that before. I remember falling on the ice and just, it was just devastating.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, I was 10 and it was felt like the worst thing ever to go from something that I was comfortable with. And I was like, you said you'd had that color your whole life. You know, I was comfortable with and then moved into a situation and we're just talking about the weather here. You
That's
know,
right.
It's not even, and it really, really affected me in a deep way. And it wasn't comfortable. And so, if moving and kind of culture shock, but we've only talked about the weather, if that can have an effect on us and how we feel, imagine some of the other things that we go through in life that have to deal with, you know, things that are worse than just weather changing.
Mm-hmm.
But those are often relationship things.
Yeah. Well,
and so
to hear you talk, they're always relationship things.
Right. Exactly. Always. But I'm talking about relationships with people.
Right.
That's what we generally think of when we hear the word relationship.
Yeah, that's true.
We think about relationships with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And we are small group primates as humans. We're made to thrive in small communities. And we're wired for connection. We're made to connect with other people. So I'm certainly not suggesting, I always think of that Seinfeld line, right? It's like, people, they're the worst. I don't think that at all. And yet sometimes some of the worst experiences we have include other people.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we thrive when we're in connection with other people.
Well, you know, the fact that you're from San Francisco and what you just said, when I put those together, that raises an interesting question in my mind, one that I first asked myself on those occasions when I visited New York City, because New York has always been relatively close to where I live, except when we lived in Virginia. But for most of my life, it's been very close to where I live. And so I've spent, you know, a fair amount of time there. I haven't lived there, but I've spent a lot of time visiting there. And when you go to a city, you are no longer in a small community. You're not even close to being in a small community, especially in New York City. You can't hardly get away from people in New York City. I mean, you basically have to have a penthouse apartment in order to get away from people in New York City. So, you know, that means the vast majority of people who live in the city are packed in. And, uh-huh. And so I'm curious, how do you think that works with, or doesn't work perhaps, with your observation that we are a small group primates?
That's an interesting question. I'm definitely not a sociologist, but, you know, I've never been to New York City. Well, I take that back. I actually, on a road trip from Connecticut, was bringing someone that lived in New York back. So it's like dropping them off mm-hmm. in Manhattan and then getting out of there. So right. It's like that was my, I didn't even stop. So,
you just threw them out of the car as you're driving along.
Right? Exactly. I do remember there being a lot of crowded traffic. And of course, I mean, I've been to other big cities and I have experienced big cities. I think we still find our own groups. If yeah. we're there long enough, you know, if we live somewhere, we find our own smaller communities that we work in, that we live in, right? Whether it's neighbors or whether it's a social group or whether it's where we work or whether it's some kind of, you know, group that meets for a certain reason.
Mm-hmm.
We create families and groups. I mean, we do it naturally.
I think that's true in New York City too, now that I think about it, because New York is actually quite proud of its neighborhoods. And a neighborhood yep. can be a section of a street. It can be like two blocks. That's a neighborhood. You know, when you hear about the famous neighborhood Greenwich Village, it sounds like it's this really big place with all the stuff that's there. You could walk in 5 minutes. It's not that big. There's not that much
so
there.
I actually have wondered about some things like that, because there's certain, and especially New York, there are certain neighborhoods that you hear about all the time. You mm-hmm. read about them in fiction. You see them in movies. You know, it's like, and I've kind of, then knowing people who have lived there and talked about how small New York is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not big. And it's like, oh, these places are small and all crammed together then.
And it's parochial too, because you have somebody who lives in Brooklyn and they feel like they're in an entirely different city from the rest of the people who live in the Bronx or Manhattan or Queens or anywhere else. Like they're an entire city unto themselves, and they almost take offense at the idea that they're part of New York. And yet they're right there. They're one of the five boroughs.
That's funny. If we have any listeners from that are in New York listening live, we would love you to call
yeah.
in.
Yeah. Tell us about your perspective too, because you have the direct, unique right. perspective of being a New Yorker. But
let's do that. By the way, let's talk to our listeners for a moment about how they actually really could call in. I know I was sort of joking, but I'm not joking at all. I would love to hear from some of
sure.
our listeners.
Yeah, well, that's true. And actually, we should probably do all of our promos. We always try to group them together anyway. So we'll start with for people who want to call in. The instructions on how to do it are on our homepage, and that's really the best place to get every piece of information about how to interact with us in various ways. But in a nutshell, if you're in the United States, you can just call in by phone, and I'll give you the phone number as well as the access code. The phone number for callers within the U.S. is area code 646-876-9923, and then there's an access code that also looks like a phone number, but it's an access code. It's 860-264-5432, and then you hit the pound sign. So once again, it's 646-876-9923, access code 860-264-5432, and then the pound sign. And there are also phone numbers you can call internationally as well, all the major countries, the English-speaking countries. There's a list that you can click on, a link there. It'll show you all of the different phone numbers you can use to call in to talk to us. The schedule is also listed there, so you know when we're broadcasting. Most of our listeners are listening on a podcast basis, you know, listening to the pre-recorded version of the show rather than the live version. But if you want to call in, you need to know when the schedule is. So look at the schedule. It's right there on the homepage. Also, we want to, once again, remind people who are not yet subscribers, become a subscriber, because then you get all these episodes coming right to your smartphone. Really easy to do. I've made it a little bit easier on the homepage than it was before. There's now a particular link for iPhone and iPad users. It looks just like the little podcast app icon that's on your phone or your iPad. You click that, and it takes you right to the page where you can subscribe, and then right below that is where you'll find the individual episodes. You click on one of those to listen to the episode. And similarly, on Android phone, there's another link for you guys to click that you do need to have a podcast app installed, but those are easy enough to find. Just go to the Play Store and type in podcast, and you'll get more apps than you can possibly shake a stick at. And once you get that installed, just do a little search for LOA Today, and we'll pop up that way too. And then finally, we want to make sure that everybody is continuing to post about LOAToday.net, because that really is helping. We are getting significant numbers of people discovering us for the first time because of that campaign we've been doing for a couple months now. So please keep going, because we want more and more people to get their daily dose of happy. We want the entire planet to get a daily dose of happy, and you're the ones who are helping make that happen. So those are our three promo messages.
Yay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yes, so we would love you to subscribe and to call us and to reach out and give us a shout, and also, you know, connect in any way that feels good to you, whether it's our contact form or just giving us a wave on social media or emailing us or however. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, it occurs to me too. I have never really made it a point to announce what our addresses are on social media, but I can tell you very quickly, if you're trying to tweet to us on Twitter, we're LOA Today Radio, so at LOA Today Radio, that's how you reach us there. It's the same handle on Instagram. On Facebook, it's at LOA Today, so any of those will get a message to us, and we are trying to pay more and more attention to people when they are contacting us through the social media. So, you know, rest assured, we will get back to you and say thank you for contacting us.
Oh, yes, definitely. It's always fun to have someone, you know, pop into your mentions and say hello.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
And I love stories. I mean, you know, we've done a whole book of stories.
Mm-hmm.
LOA Today success stories.
That's right.
Stories of people using consciously or not actually, because some of the stories of this book were like, this is what happened, and only in hindsight did I realize that this was the law of attraction.
Well, I had a couple of those myself. A couple of those stories were mine. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
And so, you know, stories, I occasionally get a story through email of somebody that listens, or somebody's found me somewhere and sends me a story. And it's always just exciting, you know, to
Well, stories are fun. Talk about relationships. Stories are probably the primary way we as human beings first learn about relationships.
Yes. Well, and it's how we build relationship, right? And I think it's important to understand that this is how we connect, and it's how we create. Like, our stories are what we create our life with.
Yes.
And the stories that we tell about ourselves, the stories that we tell about our relationships, the stories that we tell about, you know, everything. That's why when we were going through the, earlier in the year, we walked our way, read our way through Money and the Law of Attraction, and we really took our time and we discussed. And so much of that book is continually encouraging us to write a new story, write a better money story, write a better story about your health, write a better story about your relationships. And that's, you know, that's really true when you, it's really funny when people find out what I do. Because that's often a question that you get asked when you meet someone, right? What do you do?
Right, right.
When people find out that I am a relationship coach, not every time, but many times they say, oh, you need to talk to my husband, or you need to talk to my sister, or, oh, I need my kid to talk to you. It's really funny, because it makes me laugh. It's like, it's always on someone else.
Of course. Exactly. Yeah.
And what I like to point out is that our relationships, just like everything else that we experience in life, are just one big mirror showing us what's going on within us.
Isn't that annoying? I mean, just when you think you got the buck pass to somebody else, it all comes reflecting right back on yourself. I mean, come on. Can't you ever get away with anything?
Now, you know, one thing that I will say, and it's usually when people say that, they're not completely 100% serious, but sometimes they are. I mean, I have gotten into serious conversations with someone that said, well, I wish you could talk to my, you know,
fill in
my
the blank.
Spouse.
Right.
Yeah. And often I will ask the question, you know, well, what's going on? Tell me about that. And if the person really is struggling and in a relationship with someone who they feel is not treating them well, or, you know, for whatever reason, they feel that the person doesn't listen to them, doesn't understand, or whatever is bothering them. I'm always careful to really listen and make sure that when we talk about our relationships being a mirror for us, that that works more than one way.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is it seems like it'd be really easy to just assume that that means that like a physical mirror, right? A physical mirror. If I look into the mirror and wave, it's waving back at me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a reflection of me.
Right.
And sometimes it's exactly like that. But other times, you know, it's showing us how we're treating ourselves. So in the case of somebody being in, this is where law of attraction and relationships to me can get a little bit sticky in the explanation. And that is anytime that the relationship is abusive. And I don't just mean physically abusive, but emotionally abusive,
mm-hmm.
Verbally abusive. When you're involved in a relationship where someone is treating you in a way that's abusive, that doesn't mean that you are also being abusive and that the mirror is showing yourself back to you. But at all. And that's not what it means. It does not mean that your experience is your fault. However, remember we've talked so often about the difference between blame and responsibility. Is that when you recognize that you are in the relationship because you're tolerating that kind of behavior, or because you're accepting it,
mm-hmm.
or because you're allowing yourself to be there,
mm-hmm.
then there's a big aha moment sometimes of, oh, the mirror is showing you what you're allowing.
That's true.
And so that's when we can use the mirror example and it makes sense. Sometimes the mirror of our relationships does show us the way we're behaving. If you've ever heard of Byron Katie, she has a process called The Work, and it's a very, very simple process. It's like four questions. It's easy peasy, and she gives it away online. I think it's thework.org, but if you look her up, Byron Katie, The Work is there. And what is really funny is that there's a worksheet that goes with it, and it's called the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet.
Oh, really? What a
and
name.
It's, you know, she's like, look, all our lives we've been told not to judge our neighbor. And we're all doing it in our head all the time.
So we might as well make it public. Is that the idea?
it's definitely not something you generally make public, but it is something that you put on paper and just get it out. Just get it out there.
Yeah.
But here's the caveat. And it's kind of a spoiler, but it's a very simple process. But what ends up happening in her process of inquiry, where she's asking certain questions that are very simple on the surface, right? Like the question, is that true?
Mm.
Right? Like I say to you, oh, my neighbor is so mean to me. And you go, is that true? And I go, yes, it's true. And you say, is it absolutely true? Right? And you might be shocked at how powerful those questions are when they're really asked in a conversation where there's struggle going on in a relationship. What's funny is that by the time you work through the process, you realize that, you know, it's on you and it's all you, and that maybe you're the one that's being mean, and that maybe it's like, oh my goodness, it's mind blowing. And so sometimes the things that we think we're going through with other people. We're guilty of ourselves. and I'm careful here to say I'm not talking generally about abusive relationships. Sometimes we might label it that way. If you're in an abusive relationship, you need to take care of yourself. Get yourself somewhere where you're safe.
Absolutely.
And remove yourself from any, you know, danger. There are places that you can call. There are people that will help. So I'm generally just talking about struggles that we have in relationships, disagreements, things that are uncomfortable, boundaries that are weak, in regular non-abusive relationships. And in those, many times, the things that we think someone else is, you know, I'm making air quotes, right, doing to us, we're doing to ourselves, we're doing to them, we just don't see it until we're willing to look at everything like it's a mirror.
I think there's something else, too. I like the way you initially framed it about how blame really is not, it's something we engage in too much and we need to get away from. It occurs to me that very often when we're talking about who is responsible, usually there's an element of blame attached to that. And it really shouldn't have to be. In fact, it really isn't a part of it. It's not. I don't think it's really appropriate for blame to ever be a part of that conversation. And I would equate it to, like, say, a sport, like a game of basketball or you know, European football, soccer, or some other game where there is a passing of balls that goes around, right? So if you're playing basketball and, you know, you're dribbling the ball and you pass the ball to somebody else and that person receives it, is it their fault? And if they pass it back to you, is it your fault? Well, no, you're just one person's taking responsibility for the ball and the next person's taking responsibility and each one has their role to play. There's no blame involved. It's just that's part of the game. You're passing the ball back and forth. Well, I personally think that's the way we should be looking at relationships. I think it's actually harmful to include the idea of blame when we're talking about relationships. And yet, that's what we do like 99% of the time. Even the way we express the way we talk about relationships includes blame. It's like, it was really your fault. It was really my fault all along. I can, you know, as I go through the process, it was really my fault. No, it's not fault. It's just, it's my responsibility without any blame attached. I'm the one holding the ball now.
Right. You know, it's funny, in my own personal experience, and I did have an experience of being in an emotionally abusive marriage. And this was way back before I knew what that looked like. And before I knew what was really going on. And before I knew a whole lot about law of attraction, but it's sort of like I learned all of it at once. And in that situation, when I recognized, I mean, and I don't mean over time, I mean, it was in a moment when I recognized that this particular grouping of behavior, and I'll give you a little idea, like the silent treatment was part of it. The silent treatment and discounting and certain things that were going on, when I realized that they were labeled abuse, like in books and writing documents that describe certain types of behavior, those things are considered emotional abuse and verbal abuse.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Even though to me, for the silent treatment to be labeled verbal abuse, right? It's like, it's nonverbal, but it's abusive. Mm-hmm. And when I recognized, it was really like someone threw a glass of cold water in my face, because what I recognized in that moment was that if I'm being abused, that means I'm a victim.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, that was so contrary to what I wanted to be.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
Absolutely.
I did not want to be a victim. And I imagine that people will hear me say that and agree, like you just did, like, yeah, sure. Like, we don't want to be a victim. But what we do when we say, when we start doing just what you're talking about, we're throwing the ball back and forth, but it's a ball of blame, right?
Well, very says, often. Yeah,
well, I only said that because you said that.
Right,
well,
right.
You did this to me. Well, you're the one that did this, right?
Yeah.
What we're doing when we're pointing the finger and we're saying, you're the bad guy, is we're saying, I'm the victim.
Mm-hmm.
And often in conversations like this that go down that path, we're two people and we're each of us vying for victim status, which is so ridiculous.
It is when you state it that way, but it's true. That's what most of these kinds of conversations are about. I'm going to, like, I'll victimize you.
I'm the victim here. Yeah. And, and here's the thing is that we've talked about victim energy before. That it doesn't have to be in an abusive relationship that we feel like we're in victim mode. It's any time where we're like, oh, this sucks. Life sucks. This isn't going to get any better. I hate my job. Like, things aren't going right. Nobody's ever going to understand. This is not going to work out. You know, we've all been there at some point or a time. We've hit some low spot where we've experienced that level of energy, which is often called victim energy. It's the energy that everything's against us. We don't have any control. Nothing's going to get better. How am I going to see my way out of this? I'm not. It's very hard to see your way out when you're down there. And it's at that bottom of the scale, of the emotional scale.
And beyond that, the one way that we do see as the way out is you have to fix it. It's your fault. That's the only way I can ever get out is if you fix it.
Someone else, you're saying.
Yeah.
So, and it's like, you did this to me. And
right.
And so the thing that's been really helpful to me is such a small thing, but it's got such a big consequence to it. And that is that I don't want to be a victim.
That's right.
I don't like victim mode. It doesn't feel good to me.
Not at all.
And I don't want to stay there.
Nope.
And when I catch myself there, and I do, I mean, because it's part of the human experience.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm telling you, I've learned to see it pretty quickly, I think, instead of wallow in it and live there, which I had done at some point in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And when I recognize it, I pop out of it really quickly because I don't want to be a victim. So how do you pop out of it? Well, you make the decision or the choice that you are responsible. And it's not that you're at fault or that you're to blame. It's that you're just taking responsibility.
Right. It's responsibility without blame.
Right. So I call it radical responsibility because...
Ooh, I like that term.
I call it that because there's no blame in there. It's not allowed to be in there, right? And what that means is that if someone or something happens to me, right, I'm responsible for how I receive it or don't receive it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm responsible for what I do with it. I'm responsible for how I feel. I'm responsible for how I respond. I mean, that's responsibility, my ability to respond, right? So I take responsibility because if I keep putting the responsibility on you and the blame on you, now I'm a victim again and I don't want to be a victim. So that's the part that's always helped me pop out of that mode of, boy, this really sucks and it's not going to get better and see how badly I was treated and wah, wah, right? That's how I get out of it is I recognize, oh, wait a minute. Nope. I don't want to be down here in victim land. So I'm going to get out of victim land. I'm going to take responsibility for what I do with this. It doesn't mean that you won't ever be victimized, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we do have people... we do have experiences where someone else treats us in a way we don't want to be treated.
Oh, yeah. There are predators for sure.
And so, you know, but it's what we do with it afterwards. We take responsibility to heal from it. We take responsibility to keep ourselves safe. We take responsibility to even help others that are going through something similar. Mm-hmm. We take responsibility for how we want to feel. And that's the road upward. That's the road out is I don't want to feel like this anymore. And I don't want to be a victim. I don't want someone else to have control over my experience. Because in reality, here's where the mirror comes in. You have control because we create it with our imagination.
Yeah.
And no one, you know, I tell that story because I still think it's so funny. When my sister years ago first heard about law of attraction, she was like many of us, very excited about it,
mm-hmm.
and very fired up about it. And oh my goodness, like thoughts become things, right? It was probably Mike Dooley, right? It's like become things. And she was excitedly talking to someone about it, neighbor, coworker. And she said the person was talking about all these terrible, you know, person was having a victim energy experience, but talking about how life sucked, you know, and how bad things were. And my sister, of course, was fired up about law of attraction and said, well, but you can change these things just by the things that you think. And the person recognized that her thought processes weren't that great. She said, well, I think this and I think that, and you know, they weren't really great things. And sister said, well, just don't think those things, switch your thoughts to something better.
Mm-hmm.
And the person said, well, I can't control my thoughts. And my favorite part of the story is my sister said, well, then who does?
Good.
And the person was like, I don't know. You are the only one that, I mean, that's kind of a special thing to think about. That's kind of a powerful thing, is that there is part of me that no one else can get in there if I don't let them, right? It's like in my imagination, I can create what I want.
And I love that question. You know, well, who does? Because instantly the thought that comes to one's mind, and as soon as it comes to the mind, you don't want to say it because you realize how silly it is. But it's the dominant thought, which is, it's everybody else's fault. It's not me. Everyone else controls my thinking, not me.
Well, and here's the place that, you know, we discuss this, you and I, Walt, a lot on the show, and that is that our thoughts can be wild and unwieldy.
They can be.
And it is up to us to make the effort to rein our thoughts in and learn how to have focus. And it's not something that always comes so easy.
No, it can take quite some time.
Yeah, it takes practice. It takes determination. And we bring ourselves back to it. Just like yesterday, we were talking about the pivot.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea of, you know, thinking about something we don't want. Whatever it is that's weighing on us, whether it's we're getting a cold or there's a bill need to be paid and we don't know how, or whether it's our relationship is uncomfortable and we want it to be better, and those kind of obsessive thoughts where we're thinking about it over and over, we're worrying, you know, what's that idea that worrying is like praying for what you don't want?
Right. Yep.
And we may have to bring ourselves back to the better feeling thought over and over and over and over.
Yeah.
But eventually it gets easier. We get those, like, they're mental muscles. I mean, they really are. They're neural connections that get stronger.
Wendy Dillard and I were talking in a kind of a similar vein during yesterday afternoon's podcast, in which she pointed out something that is, it's obviously true, but it's not something I'd given a lot of thought to, which is, you got to want it. And I'm sure you've had this experience as a coach. She told me stories about how she had had clients that she tried to work with, or even friends that she tried to work with, and she was so sure she could help them, and she was really coaching them and all that kind of thing. And at the end of the day, they just weren't all that enthused. And she realized they just didn't want it badly enough.
Right. Right. You know, I wrote something recently about our this wishing faculty of ours is a commitment phobe.
Oh, I like it. Well, that's very daring stuff.
Well, because wishing, you know, we see I really love German cars.
Okay. Right?
So I may see a Porsche Carrera go by and say, ooh, I wish I had that car. How committed am I to getting that car?
Not terribly.
No, not really.
Nope.
I enjoyed watching it go by.
Yeah.
If someone handed me the keys to one, I would definitely hop in and take it for a spin.
But would you buy it necessarily?
You know, if I had more money that I knew what to do with, you know, I don't know, maybe I'd buy one. But but am I committed?
Really strong commitment.
But am I committed
to
having one of those in my life right now, today? Am I committed? I mean, I hired a coach and said, this is what I want.
If you have that much money and it's like, I might buy it, that's so far from committed, it's crazy.
right? So that's the point I'm making, is that we can wish for things and we can dream about things. And I'm, you know, I'm a big, big fan of Neville Goddard. And so imagination is the thing. Yes, I believe that that is the key. However, it's a lot different because there's a commitment aspect to it. It's not just a wish. And so, yes, I absolutely agree with Wendy. You've got to want it. How much do you want it? And that's actually a question that I will ask people, who want to work with me. And we're having a discussion about what it is that they want to create that they're, you know, reaching out to me for help with. And one of the questions that I will sometimes ask once they describe to me what it is they want is, on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being you're not interested at all and 10 being you will do anything to make this happen, where are you?
Mm.
Because if you're a 6, you're not ready. I don't say that part.
Well, that's very diplomatic of you.
Well, because usually people will say, I mean, I've had people say, I'm a 10, or I'm an 11, I'm ready. Or I've had people say, I'm an 8. I actually had someone say to me once, very self-aware, said, you know, now that I think about it, I don't think I'm ready for this. I think I'm about a 5. I need to go work on this first.
Wow. Good for that person.
But so, yes, you have to want it. And, you know, we came onto the show today saying, let's talk about relationships. And I will tell you that I did not grow up with a positive relationship model in my life. Not with my parents anyway.
Mm-hmm.
My parents divorced when I was 6. So I didn't grow up with, you know, two parents that were committed to each other and loved each other and had a healthy relationship. Mm. I didn't have that.
Yeah.
But it's something that I wanted,
mm-hmm.
really, really wanted, and tried to make it happen really, really hard. I mean, I was like, really wanted a happy relationship, because this is what I recognized, is that I'd been happy in times when my health wasn't so great. And I'd been happy in times when there wasn't a whole lot of money. But this unhappy marriage thing sucked. And I wanted to have a happy relationship.
Mm.
I wanted it. I was committed. And it takes two people to make that. And what I recognized at some point was that only one of us really cared about that. And it was me.
Oh, yeah.
And so the day that I recognized it was my responsibility, and I don't mean my responsibility, I can't change another person. I can only change me. I can't change, right? But when I changed, everything started changing. And I can't tell you that my marriage changed and that that marriage became happy. But what changed about me is I recognized that I was tolerating behavior that wasn't going to ever create a happy relationship, and that I just wasn't going to do that anymore. And those first small steps of saying, this isn't okay, I want something better than this. I want to be treated the way I treat other people. When I got really clear about that, this doesn't sound so happy when I say everything fell apart, but it was the best thing that ever happened, because it allowed me to be in a space where I could know exactly what I wanted, and I could learn what healthy relationships look like, and then I could find that. And I did.
That's good.
Right.
I love too what you said early on there, where you said that, I wish I could tell you, but I can't tell you that this realization ended up fixing my relationship. I mean, that's not quite what you said, but that was the gist of it. And I
would love to say, you know, when I got clear about what I wanted and I realized I wanted a committed, happy, wonderful, magical relationship, as soon as I was clear about it and started focusing on it, my partner completely changed and was, you know, wonderful to me and wanted the same thing. But that's not what happened.
And I emphasize how I really admire that you said that, because there are so many people, I see this a lot on Facebook, so many people who either as a wish, kind of playing off what you said earlier, or they try to turn into this burning desire of making the relationship work, fixing it, getting that, they want the ex back, right? They want the return of some fictional relationship that never actually existed, but they've created it in their minds that, well, you know, this is the way it could have been or should have been, and that's the way I want it to be, and it's got to be with that person. And boy, what a setup that is. Talk about being in victim mode, you know?
I get those emails. I get those emails from people that say, that are very, very straightforward and say, I will not be happy until I have this particular person back in my life. They won't talk to me. Will you help me get my ex back? And I understand how painful it is to be living with a heart that feels broken.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's one of the reasons why I started working in this field, because I know what it's like to have a broken heart. But on the day that my heart was so broken and I started asking myself some questions, and the question that I asked myself that I blew my own mind with was, why do you want to be with someone who doesn't want you?
Yes.
And it was a powerful question. I realized, oh my gosh, why am I trying so hard to be with someone who doesn't care about me?
Right.
And doesn't want to be with me?
Right.
Oh my goodness, that's like insanity. Why would I do this? And
take out the word almost. It is insanity. That is a truly insane concept.
At that moment, I realized, oh my goodness, I want to be with somebody that's crazy about me.
Right.
I want to be with somebody that wants to be with me and is excited to be with me. And what a difference in energy level that is, right? It's like, it's different.
And then there are the people who say, well, yeah, I want that person to be the person who's crazy about me. I want to use the law of attraction to make that person be crazy about me.
Well, one of my good friends, who's also a fantastic law of attraction coach, I call her the law of attraction coach, Jeanette Ma. We've talked about this at length before with each other, and she has a blog post she wrote. It's called The Voodoo I Don't Do. and she actually wrote it. You can Google it and find it. It's so cute. She actually wrote it with like a verse in there that sounds like a Dr. Seuss verse, but because she gets those calls too.
Sure.
Is help me attract, use the law of attraction to attract this specific person. And here's the thing, you know, if there's a specific person that you feel attracted to, and maybe you just don't know them yet and you'd like to know them better, that's not what we're talking about.
No.
We're talking about a person that has pretty much made it very clear to you that they don't want anything to do with you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They don't want to be in a relationship with you. They don't return your texts or your calls. Or when they do, they say something that's not exactly loving. There's no voodoo that you want to do to change that person. They're not a fit for you. They don't want to be with you. And that's really hard to take sometimes, but it's the way it is. And I think that we're not talking at that point about law of attraction. We're talking about manipulation.
Yeah, I think so too.
And so it's so much better, believe me, it's so much better when the person that you attract is also attracted to you.
I think there's also something that it's kind of like, to me, the elephant in the room. Whenever we're talking about a situation where we have one person who had a semi-relationship with another person, that relationship fell apart, that person has made it clear they don't want to be with the first person, and the first person wants to attract that person back and attract them back in such a way that they will be loving to themselves. And that other person will adore me and will take care of me, and it'll be all wonderful with that person. And all I want to do is I want to use the law of attraction to make that happen. The thing I want to say about that scenario is that it ignores a really, really, really important factor. And that is, if there was some way for you to actually do that, if you could actually use the law of attraction to make somebody else behave the way you want them to behave, to love you the way you want to be loved, to be the way, to behave the way, to act the way you think your ideal lover should be, and that it has to be that person. If you got a person to do that, you would now have a relationship with somebody who no longer has their own will.
Right, a robot.
A robot. And one of the most important things in relationship is different perspectives. You cannot have a second perspective from another person if they are not operating from the point of view of their own will. Can't be done.
Well, and here's the thing that I think about in the whole concept of our relationships being mirrors for us, is that what that's mirroring back to you is a lack of self-love.
It really is, yeah.
Because when we really love ourselves, then we want a loving partner that loves us and cherishes us and appreciates us and sees the good in us. Because we see it in ourselves, because we love ourselves, because we know that we're worthy of a great love like that. And only someone who is really lacking self-love would want someone as a relationship partner who doesn't want to be with them, right? Isn't that the exact mirror of of a lack of self-love, is that I'm attracting someone who also doesn't really love me?
Absolutely. That's right. Yeah. Whereas if you are somebody who loves yourself, if you're somebody who really does feel very good about yourself, the last thing you want is a yes man. You want somebody who has a strong perspective. And you want that perspective to be different from yours, so that you've got a basis for conversation and having interests. And you know, the little differences make the contrast and the similarities make it fun. You got to have that other perspective. And the only way that can happen is if you're both in a place where you can love yourselves as well as each other.
Right. So once you start working on that, on loving yourself, everything starts to shift and change.
It does. It does.
And you'll begin to attract people into your life that also love you because of the idea that this is like a mirror for you. But when you're in that place where you don't have strong boundaries and you don't stand up for yourself and you don't love yourself and you don't think you're worthy, then that's exactly what you'll attract. Someone who tramples on your boundaries, whatever boundaries are there, and someone who doesn't show you respect and doesn't show you love, because that's the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. What you want to do is work on the self-love. And as that develops and gets stronger, so will the kind of people that you automatically attract into your life.
Law of attraction, like attracts like. When you love yourself, you attract other people who love themselves.
Yes. And who can then love you. And that's a good point too, because when you don't have a strong self-love, you attract other people who also don't have a strong self-love.
That's right. Yep.
And, you know, there may be some narcissism that covers that up, and they look like that's all they care about is their self, but underneath it's not a true self-love.
Right.
And so what ends up happening is, how can they love you? They don't even love themselves.
Exactly.
And because of that, you get the blame for everything as well. And so, yeah, very unhealthy dynamic there. And the key to it all is to find the love for yourself, whether you're in or out of a relationship.
And how interesting, we just described a situation where you have two people who don't love themselves. And what was the first word you brought back into it? Blame.
Right.
It goes together. Blame goes with a lack of self-love.
Right. It does.
It's astonishing, but it's true. And,
yeah.
and that's actually, to me, that's the big aha right there. Knowing that when you don't love yourself, you're in blame mode. So anytime that I'm finding myself blaming myself, or blaming somebody else, or blaming a situation, or blaming anything, oops, that's a time to look at how well am I loving myself right now.
Good point. And that's the thing, you know, is that whole idea that we've really romanticized about, you know, you complete me, right? No.
A
couple
what a joke
is
that
not,
is.
Well, or we say my other half. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But in truth, a healthy couple is made up of two wholes.
Two wholes, absolutely. Yes.
When you are whole in yourself and your self-love is intact and your partner is the same, that's what makes a healthy couple. It's not two halves of one whole. It's two halves of a couple is two wholes.
It really is.
One plus one is two. A couple is two.
And we now have had a whole podcast because we're out of time. But I'm looking forward to carrying on the conversation because we get to do it twice today. You're the only one I get to do it twice in one day. So I look forward to doing that later on today.
Happening.
All right. We hope that our listeners will join us as well next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.